The Pain Pod is produced by Bloodstream Media and is intended for informational and educational purposes only, and is made possible thanks to our sponsor, Trimo Pharmaceuticals. Visit resethastudy.com to learn more about their work.
We'll go further together if we understand better and better what the issues are for people with chronic pain, not just us toiling away in the lab somewhere and, you know, the proverbial academic or ivory tower.
Pain is subjective. It's unique. And it is personal. And to those with chronic pain, the idea of research and science can sometimes seem daunting, distant, and disconnected from the very personal and visceral experience of pain. But is research and science really that disconnected from the patient experience? Do patients influence or inform research? Can the study of pain get personal? In this episode, we take a look at the advancements in chronic pain research and the steps they're taking towards a more comprehensive understanding in hopes of bridging that gap between patient and researcher. Hi, I'm Mel Forrest, and you're listening to The Pain Pod.
I'm a professor and chair of the Department of Pain and Translational Symptom Science at the University of Maryland, Baltimore, and I'm also the co-director of our campus-wide Center to Advance Chronic Pain Research.
This is Susan Dorsey, and today she helps us break down how pain is researched.
Maybe we should back up a little bit and say, how do we measure pain? So for the longest time, the nursing definition of pain was pain is what the patient says it is. There are other definitions of pain. It's hard to quantify it.
Pain is what the patient says it is. To me, this idea seemed a little outdated. Pediatric hematologist and friend of the Pain Pod, Dr. Marzady, agrees with Susan that measuring pain isn't so simple.
Oftentimes, our surrogate marker is asking the patient, are you in pain? Yes or no? And when they say yes, we say, tell us how bad it is on a scale of 1 to 10. Over the course of time, it's become clear that this is a pretty bad way to measure pain.
So if pain is difficult to measure and quantify, then how do we effectively research pain?
So when we talk about measurement and pain, there's subjective questionnaires that we can use that are reliable and valid to measure acute pain or chronic pain. And then there's this more objective measure that we call quantitative sensory testing.
Here's a simple way to think about it. If you touch a hot stove, you have a noxious input that activates sensory neurons, sensory fibers in the skin that transmit action potentials and information to the spinal cord. And at that level, those impulses that travel back on those sensory nerves dump excitatory amino acids and transmitters into the spinal cord, which sends signals to your brain that says, hey, get away from that noxious stimulus and protect the injury.
What quantitative sensory testing is trying to do is to say, how intact or how functional are the sensory fibers of a particular person? And we test that through temperature challenges and through mechanical stimulation.
So basically, we have three types of these sensory fibers, and each of those fiber types transmits different information. So for the hot stove example, that's one type of fiber. But if I hit your hand with a hammer, sorry, that's a different type of fiber that would be activated.
So when we do quantitative sensory testing, it's a computerized program that we initiate. So we would put a thermode, basically a rectangle square, let's say on your forearm. So if we're looking at heat, it would ramp up the temperature slowly. And we're looking for three things. Warmth detection threshold, so when does it feel warm and you tell us? When does it feel hot? And then we measure something called heat pain tolerance. So what is the hottest temperature? And of course, it has cutoffs that don't damage skin and that sort of thing. There are definitely measurement norms for each of these values, for the warmth detection, the heat pain, and the heat pain threshold. And so we're measuring with heat and with cold the fibers that respond to temperature changes and seeing whether they're intact. And that tells us something about your system.
To quickly recap, through this type of quantitative sensory testing, you can measure pain warmth detection, heat pain, and heat pain threshold against normative values to learn more about a person's system. Got it?
The other two things that we like to do that we consider as part of quantitative sensory testing is we measure, first of all, your brain can send signals to your spinal cord to either say, you're in pain and we want to keep facilitating it, or your injury is healed and we want to inhibit it. So it's your body's own method of controlling pain. We call it the endogenous opioid system. It's your internal system. Some of us have a perfectly intact internal pain modulation system and some people don't. So we think that people who are susceptible to transition from acute to chronic pain may not have a very intact modulation system. So we can measure that. And then the other thing we can measure is your response to repeated stimulation over time, which we call temporal summation.
So imagine if I pricked your skin over and over again at the same intensity and same timing, and I asked you to give me a pain rating every single time, 0 being no pain, 10 being horrible pain. People who don't wind up and get super excitable might go 5, 5, 5, 5. But somebody with temporal summation might go 5, 5, 6, 7, 7, 8, 8. You get the gist. They find the same stimulation more and more painful.
Those are also people that are more susceptible to develop chronic pain. So in sum, we're using this battery of tests to try to figure out if your sensory system and your brain mechanisms are intact and reference value, or whether they're not reference value and you would be susceptible to higher acute pain or more likely to transition to chronic pain.
Wow, that was a lot of information, and I must admit, Susan does an amazing job at explaining the physiological process that goes into measuring pain. Understanding pain from a researcher's perspective is very helpful, but in spite of all of this information, I still wasn't sure how pain researchers and experts like Susan Dorsey took into account a person's sociocultural experiences while using quantitative sensory testing.
One example I can give you is we did quantitative sensory testing in the Old Order Amish. So not a racial and ethnic disparity group, but a community of people who are genetically pretty identical and have very similar environmental systems and culture. Many of them were very much able to go to the top threshold of heat and the bottom threshold of cold. And when you dive into that a little bit, it's because they're outdoors washing clothes in hot water, they're always interacting with cold and the environment, but their sociocultural frame is one of stoicism.
The Amish are a group of traditionalist Christian church fellowships with Swiss German and Alsatian Anabaptist origins. Stoicism is a school of philosophy from ancient Greece. Those who practice stoicism sometimes endure pain and hardships without complaining or displaying discontent.
So they're less likely to report that they're in pain initially because of the cultural background that they come from. And we know that's true for many other cultures and ethnicities. There are norms, if you will. There also are obviously structural racism, and COVID-19 put an additional spotlight on health inequities and health disparities and racial and ethnic disparities. And so there are sociocultural norms and experiences that also prevent people from reporting pain accurately.
We continue to bridge the gap between researcher and patient with Susan Dorsey when we return from this brief word about our sponsor.
The Pain Pod is produced by Bloodstream Media and made possible thanks to our sponsor, Tremo Pharmaceuticals.
I feel like pain is one of those things, similar to all types of stimuli that we experience as humans, is perceived differently by all individuals.
This is Lori Yeterian, a Senior Manager of Regulatory Affairs and Operations at Tremo.
I feel like for me, the word is distracting. When I'm in pain, it's something that I see kind of as a nuisance, something that gets in the way of me living my life.
Lori also recognizes that for some, chronic pain can be much more than just a nuisance.
I think oftentimes when you're living with something that's impacting your life every single day, it can become a part of your identity.
Pain can affect identity in many other parts of a person's life. So I asked Lori if she could wave a magic wand and change one thing about the way someone experiences pain, what would it be?
Oftentimes, I think minorities' pain is underestimated. So if I could wave a magic wand, I wish that those biases didn't exist and that people could be viewed and cared for in an equitable fashion. I feel like all those things can have an impact on the way that someone perceives pain.
My name is Patrick James Lynch, and I have severe hemophilia A. Chronic pain can be caused by many things, but if you're like me and have severe hemophilia, chances are some of your pain might be the result of what's called hemophilic arthropathy, or HA for short. Tremo was founded with the goal of developing and delivering non-opioid pain therapies for people living with pain, and Tremo's RESET HA study is a clinical research study for people who experience joint pain due to hemophilia. The study is evaluating an oral, non-opioid investigational drug designed to be taken once a day to see if it may potentially help relieve joint pain and improve physical function in people with hemophilic arthropathy, or HA. You may be eligible to participate in this clinical research study if you are between the ages of 12 and 75, have been diagnosed with hemophilia A or B, have chronic pain in one or more joints, and do not take opioid medication more than 4 days a week. If you are interested in learning more about taking part in Tremo's RESET HA study, visit resethastudy.com. That's RESETHASTUDY.com to find a study location near you. Reset the way you manage your pain. Visit resethastudy.com today.
Acknowledging the sociocultural factors that can affect the way a person experiences and reports pain is important. Susan Dorsey believes that this information is essential in pain research and explains how it's being implemented today.
We're doing research in a very rigorous way. And the National Institute of Health just released their strategic plan. So there are 27 institutes and centers at the NIH, and the overarching NIH strategic plan, the first goal, and I'm not quoting it, but we'll deal with social inequality and health inequities as we think about some of these big problems, and chronic pain certainly is an epidemic that falls under the NIH umbrella.
As our conversation continued, I began to get the feeling that the gap between patient and researcher is not as wide as I had previously thought. It seems that science and research today is understanding that the biologic components that make up a person aren't the only factors that contribute to pain.
We find that pain is comorbid with depression, anxiety, stress, sleep. Sleep and pain are very related. Those are definitely comorbid conditions that can influence one's pain sensitivity, independently of your genetic profile or genetic architecture or your race or your ethnicity. And a colleague of mine, Beth Hogan at Johns Hopkins, has really tried to develop pain clinic approaches that account for more than just coming in for my pain, but making sure to think about treating the comorbid conditions. And, you know, again, at research institutions where we're conducting research, you know, we have the luxury of doing quantitative sensory testing and really delving into a lot of these psychosocial and sociocultural issues. That's not necessarily the case at a family clinic or a private healthcare office, which is unfortunate.
While people living with chronic pain may be looking for techniques and tools to help manage pain, Susan Dorsey emphasizes that her pain research work is specifically focused on trying to better understand what pain is, where it comes from, and why it's experienced differently by different people.
We don't study pain management per se. We want to mechanistically understand not just differences in pain sensitivity between different racial and ethnic groups, but we want to understand, all things being equal, if you break your arm and I break my arm, one of us is probably going to do just fine on conventional therapeutics, and our acute pain will resolve when our bone heals and our tissue heals and our inflammation goes down. The other of us may be susceptible to go on to develop chronic pain, which by definition is pain for no biological reason. It's bigger than just what's one's gender or age. Age also plays a role in pain, both physiologically and psychologically. But all things being equal, there's definitely a genetic component to all of the issues related to susceptibility. So we're really trying to take a comprehensive approach, because if we can get mechanism, then we can either develop new therapeutic targets from the mechanistic data, or we can provide clinicians and practitioners with biomarkers to say, you know what, you really are susceptible based on any number of factors. Early life stress is a big contributor of later life chronic pain. So there are many, many factors. And we're trying to look at all that in combination, which is kind of hard, but with new abilities around artificial intelligence, machine learning, systems biology, we're hoping we can put all this together along with genetic and genomic data. I think chronic pain patients need voice, should have voice. And I think what you're doing with this podcast might be a vehicle for bringing together more of this idea of academic community partnership in chronic pain, because we'll go further together if we understand better and better what the issues are for people with chronic pain, not just us toiling away in the lab somewhere and, you know, the proverbial academic or ivory tower.
As my conversation with Susan drew to an end, I began to have clarity around how we can bridge the gap between the patient experience and the clinical research surrounding pain. It's clear that building a bridge by addressing all of the components that make up pain will bring us a lot closer to understanding and treating it more effectively, and hopefully, away from that proverbial ivory tower.
People seem to only care when someone gets acutely ill or is terminally ill, and there's millions of people who are left in the middle.
We look at the pain experience through the lens of chronic illness next time on the Pain Pod. The Pain Podcast is written and hosted by me, Mel Forrest, produced by Greg Holtzman, edited by Colby Crow, artwork by Ryan Gielen and Christina Newhard, post-production support from Joshua Sterling Bragg, Rob Bradford, Allison Stoney, and Avra Friedman, and executive produced by Patrick James Lynch. The Pain Pod is produced by Bloodstream Media and presented by Tremo Pharmaceuticals. Tremo's Reset HA study is a clinical research study for people who experience joint pain due to hemophilia, and you can learn more about it by visiting resethastudy.com. And as always, if you liked this episode, make sure to subscribe, rate, and share the Pain Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Mel Forrest, and we'll be back next time with episode 4 of the Pain Pod.